This podcast is supported by The RealReal.
You know what I love most about the holidays? Giving gifts. But not just any gifts. Real gifts. Thoughtful gifts. Oh my God, how did you know gifts? That's why I love gift shopping with The RealReal. The RealReal is the most trusted name in authenticated luxury resale. And it's a holiday shopping secret I'm going to let you in on. Whether it's a surprisingly affordable, pristine condition bag for your BFF, a vintage find that's cool enough for the Gen Zer in your life, or even something your impossible to shop for dad will love. Get used to saying, I found it on The RealReal. Seriously, with over 10,000 new arrivals dropping every day from brands like Gucci, Fendi, Prada, Louis Vuitton, Tiffany & Co., and Cartier, there's guaranteed to be something for everyone on your list. Oh, and did I mention everything's up to 90% off retail?
Get $25 off your first purchase at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com to get your $25 off. TheRealReal.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
One of my favorite things she said was, I've eaten so much humble pie, it's amazing I still fit in this dress. I love that line.
A perfect blend of delusion and fat phobia.
Delusion and fat phobia. Exactly.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Please Bless This Podcast. This is the podcast where two sisters talk about all things Mormon and pop culture. And sometimes we do Housewives episode recaps.
Yeah.
We did an episode about Housewives a while back with our lovely guest host, Emer. And we got a lot of love for that episode and a lot of like interest in the Real Housewives of Salt Lake and what they're doing about Mormonism on that show.
Mm-hmm.
So new season started last night.
Yeah.
Season 3, episode 1.
Yep.
And we're going to give the people what they want and do a nice little episode 1 recap.
Before we dive in, I'm going to make myself a mocktail.
Oh, yes.
But I thought that was appropriate. And by mocktail, I mean.
Ooh, I caught a little bit of that fizz. That was really nice.
Good. It's a Safeway brand LaCroix with a strawberry in it for that those who aren't watching.
Marvelous. Katie. Yeah, so.
I feel like they are just always drinking cocktails on that show.
They really are. So on Watch What Happens Live after the episode, which is Andy Cohen's late night talk show for folks who don't know, Lisa and Whitney were on talking about the episode, and they played a game where Andy asked them questions and they could either answer or they had to like chug diet soda. And so Lisa's holding this huge like soda. And I was just like, that's the most Mormon game.
That's perfect.
So much.
That's so genius. There were two things I wanted to mention. First, my name is Katie.
We're so bad at this. Why do we always forget to say our names? My name is Elisa.
Yeah, we like to just dive right in. I also wanted to mention, we ended up kind of like switching some of our episodes around. I think in the last episode, I mentioned that we were going to be talking about Lori Vallow and Sins of the Mother this week. Mm-hmm. But we wanted to give Real Housewives the attention it deserves. Yeah,
you know, time is of the essence when a new episode comes out every week, so we're gonna go with this one for now. And Sins of Our Mother is on deck for next week, so if you're anxiously awaiting that horror, you won't have to wait too long.
Yeah, that's a rough one, but lots of fun stuff coming up too. We've got some fun spooky season
situations. Going hard for Halloween, folks, because Halloween is the best. Let's be
Halloween's
honest.
Really important to me.
Now that we're talking about Halloween, being a Mormon kid and celebrating Halloween,
oh my God,
so much drama. I feel like every Halloween was on a Sunday, even though I know that's not true. The most powerful memories I have of Halloween as a kid is not being allowed to trick or treat / sneaking out trick-or-treat.
I remember doing that too. Yeah, and just like your mom making you wear a long-sleeved turtleneck t-shirt. Underneath yes. your princess costume or whatever. Yes.
To be modest, but also to, like, I guess keep warm. Whatever. I don't know. How cold yeah. was it in the Pacific Northwest? Let's right. get real.
It's 50, 55. I would have lived. I know. Anyways. It does seem like every Halloween was on a Sunday. Also that every Christmas was on a Sunday. Wasn't that the worst?
Oh, and then you had to, like, go to church.
Yeah, on Christmas Day.
I know.
And it was brutal. Shorter and it was like, it's a Christmas program. It's, yes. It's different. It's fun. And to be fair, it was always better than the regular service. But
yes. But ugh. If you had like 9 a.m. church, it's like, when are we going to open those presents?
Later.
Nightmare. So much childhood trauma.
Can we also talk about how unfair it is that church is 2 hours long now?
I know. Come on. We suffered for 3 hours a week. Our whole lives. How
crazy.
Dare you?
Yeah. Today's Mormons don't know how good they have it.
Yeah. Okay. That was a little, you know, journey, but yeah. Let's come back to the episode. So we kick off. Honestly, the first 3 minutes, I had chills. They're just kind of setting up the conflicts of the season.
Yeah.
And all the alliances are shifting. And that's exciting to me. I love a shifting alliance.
It makes me feel unstable. I immediately was like, I'm upset. Why are Heather and Whitney being so mean to each other?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the conflict
they're cousins.
Between, they're cousins. They're just yeah, cousins. And Meredith and Lisa are now apparently just saying the most awful things you can say about another human being.
Yeah.
And just rolling with it.
So for anyone who doesn't remember the bombshell of last season, Lisa gets angry one night. She claims that she thought she was no longer mic'd and that she was just like talking, like venting to a producer or something. And she goes off on Meredith and is just like, Meredith is a whore. Meredith cheats on her husband. Meredith's husband is a deadbeat. They can't afford a house. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Goes on and on and on. And this season starts not long after that aired
mm-hmm.
and they had their reunion. So there hasn't been like a resolution.
Right. They have not even touched.
Spoken.
It. Yeah. I they think. Haven't spoken. Yeah. Yeah.
So we kick off with that. One thing I wrote in my notes was that I want to go to that steaming rooftop pool that Jen and Meredith go to.
Yes. Is These locations.
Is it in Park City?
It seemed a little bit Park City.
I need to know.
Yeah. It is a gigantic rooftop hot yeah. tub.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're there in the winter.
And they had like so much gear on. Like their hair was so big and done. And they have these huge earrings and these insane bathing suits. And they're trying so hard not to get their hair wet.
Yes.
One thing
we know about Meredith is she loves a blazer with accent buttons. And she had accent buttons on her bathing suit.
Yes.
Consistent. It was cringy.
I love her.
Oh,
love how Meredith is like confiding in Jen, mm-hmm. which is interesting.
Since all last season, she was on a crusade against Jen.
Right. And maybe now that Jen has just been brought down several pegs, maybe now she's just more like they have pity or she's more approachable.
I don't know, because at the time that this was filmed, Jen was still being like, I'm innocent.
Sure, but she like had to downsize her house. And like...
yeah, that was one scene that kind of annoyed me. She was complaining about her 4,500 square foot house.
Yeah.
I'm over here in my like Bay Area apartment.
Right.
With like one closet.
Yeah,
shut up.
Like 1,000 square foot house.
Yeah,
in the middle
like
of nowhere.
Just,
please.
I don't really feel bad for you. You like defrauded the elderly and you're like, oh, 4,500 square feet.
And I'm innocent. I did love how Jen told Meredith she should monetize her fight with Lisa by making t-shirts.
That was hilarious.
That was really funny. I actually, at that moment, I was like, what's Jen's sign? And I looked her up and she's a Scorpio.
Oh, that tracks.
Yeah.
Honestly, like great business advice.
I think so.
That stuff would sell. We have a sit down between Lisa and Heather, another weird pairing since they like yeah. have hated each other famously. I loved the flashback to the reunion where Lisa is like, I never called you Shrek. Which, by the way, she definitely did. And like, yeah, what a thing to call a person.
That is so brutal to say that out loud.
Lisa is a delight and a horror rolled into one.
She is so fascinating to me because she's so just unaware and just kind of stupid, but also like, you know, she's not.
Yes, right. She's very calculated.
It's just very confusing to me. One of my favorite things she said was, I've eaten so much humble pie, it's amazing I still fit in this dress. I love that line.
A perfect blend of delusion and fat phobia.
Delusion and
fat phobia. Yes. Exactly. Yeah, Lisa is pretty iconic. She's Mormon 2.0. The reason she and Heather are sitting down is to talk through, like, what do I do about this Meredith situation? I said these things and Meredith is mad at me. But like, even as they're addressing that problem, Lisa is like, well, I wasn't coming for her. I was just in a blind rage.
Yeah. That's not an excuse. That doesn't mean anything.
Right. It's meaningless. It's silly. As if like the things you say in a blind rage don't count.
Right.
She also later in the episode talks to Meredith's husband, Seth, and does a lot of kind of similar sort of like, well, I'm responsible for all my sisters, which what are we talking about? And like, no one ever checks in on me. So she's like not actually being accountable for saying horrible things about her good friend.
Right. She should be and should have done several weeks earlier, like get on your knees, like beg forgiveness.
Yes.
What can I do to recover this relationship? I love you. I'm so sorry.
Right. You know? Even if I thought I wasn't on camera mic'd up, the things I said were horrible.
Right.
Especially about a good friend.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
And she tries to play it off.
Excuse.
Right. She plays it off like, I don't actually think those things. And it's like, well,
but they come from somewhere.
Right.
And then the thing she kept saying was, it comes from a place of hurt, which is a real housewife's tactic. I feel like it's like a way to sidestep responsibility. Like, well, I'm not a bad person. I was just hurt.
And it's how mean people navigate relationships with each other. Like, we're all mean and awful to each other. Who was meaner and more awful?
Right.
You know?
And now they're both being pretty mean and awful. Yeah. I mean, Meredith was talking some shit on this episode to anyone who would sit down and listen.
Yeah.
I mean, she accused Lisa of having an affair, which, okay.
Sure.
But then she accused her of, like, having sex for money, essentially.
Right. Having sex to, like, save the business. And she's also throwing their business under the bus, saying Lisa's family business isn't bringing in any money, or it's an insane debt or whatever.
Right. She's like, oh, well, why is there this SEC filing? As if it just kind of, like, floated down one day right in front of Meredith. As if she didn't go, like, seeking out information about Lisa's businesses.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot.
It's a
pretty
lot.
Dicey. I will say, though, that Lisa's behavior around all of this does feel very Mormon to me.
Mm-hmm.
There is this sense of, like, I'm not a bad person. I cannot even be open to the possibility that I am anything but morally superior and righteous.
Mm-hmm.
So there has to be 65 other reasons why I did a horrible thing.
Right. And also just the waiting to say anything. She's not like coming to her friend and saying like, oh my God, I can't believe you heard that. I can't believe I said that. I'm so sorry. Instead of doing that, she just waits.
Yeah.
And waits and waits and waits, like as if somebody else is going to come to her, or if not that, it's just going to blow over. We're just not going to address it.
Right. Not addressing things. That's peak Mormon right there. There's a passive aggressiveness, a delusion. And like, I recognize that good people can do horrible things.
Yeah.
And horrible people can do good things. Everybody is a mixture of both. But when you're deep in Mormonism, I don't think that's how Mormons see themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They're not like, I am both good and bad. It's like, I am fighting every minute of my life to be only good, because the natural man is an enemy to God, right? So like, if you are telling me I did something bad, the stakes are high.
Yeah.
And I can't accept that.
Right. And there has to be a workaround. Like, there is no humble pie. Yes. It is like, okay, but I am so righteous. Everything I do is good.
Right.
Everything I do is coming from this place of wanting to be so righteous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I find that really interesting. People like that drive me crazy.
Yes.
Great.
Uh-huh. Because we know them well, Katie. They have like framed our entire lives.
And how hard is it to just say, oh, you know what? You're right. Oh my gosh. You know,
I'm so sorry.
That
I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah. That super sucked. I'm so sorry. What can I do? You know,
this is a weird little tangent, but one of my like phases of post-Mormon deconstruction was when I started apologizing to people for things I said to them when I was Mormon that were really fucked up. Mm-hmm. But that at the time I was like, oh, no. That was fine. I went through this little phase of doing that. And there were definitely like positive interactions that came from it where people were like, thank you for saying that. You know, like, yeah, that was fucked up.
Yeah. But
I understand because I was also deeply entrenched in some beliefs that made me do and say fucked up things. But then there were other people who were like, I don't remember what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was a journey. And I do think it's reflective of like, there's something about leaving Mormonism that makes you realize like, I'm a fallible person and I need to take ownership of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes that hurts people.
Right. I forgot about that. You've talked about that journey before. I think that's really something.
It was very pure and precious and maybe a little silly, but it is what it is.
Good for you.
Okay, let's dive into the most Mormon scenes of the episode, which are at Whitney Rose's house.
Yes.
Whitney's daughter, Bobby Rose, is making a list. It's like a pro-con list about men. I think in essence, it's like, this is the kind of man I'm looking for.
Right. It didn't totally make sense.
No.
She's like, I like athletic.
It's yeah,
like,
calling it really a pro-con list was a little confusing.
He's just thinking about boys.
The essence of it, I was like, oh, have I ever made those lists in a very Mormon context in particular?
Yeah.
Tell me, did you write letters to your future husband in Young Women?
100%. Wrote letters to my future husband, to my future self. Wrote a list of attributes that were absolutely necessary in a future
and, like,
husband.
Return missionary was at the top.
Oh, I don't remember that, but maybe.
It was in my world.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, but we were, like, told to make a list of attributes and, like, to return to that when we start seriously dating as adults and to, like, take it really seriously.
Yes.
You know?
This was like a semi-regular activity that we were doing in Young Women's, which Mormon girls are in the Young Women program from 12 to 18. So starting at like 12, we're like imagining this future husband and writing to him. I wrote a letter. I wonder if I still have it. I might
probably
have kept it out of morbid like fascination. A letter I wrote to my future husband to give him on our wedding night. Oh my God, I have to find it. I bet it's in my old scriptures. I should give it to my husband.
Yes. You should have him read it on the air.
He's going to be like so cringed out, but I might do it.
And he's going to be like, I don't know what any of this means. And you're going to be like, that's why I love you.
So, yeah, I mean, they are obviously Whitney's family's out of the church, but the Mormon culture runs deep. And I'm sure like other young girls outside of Mormonism imagine their future husbands. But it was like very systematic in the church.
For sure. I did have the thought while I was watching that because Whitney walks in and she's like, what are you doing, Bobby Rose? And that she's just kind of like poking fun at her and they're laughing about it. And then Heather shows up and Heather joins in and she's like, oh my gosh, you know, and they're just laughing. And I'm like, I feel like growing up, I could never talk about like being boy crazy,
no,
you know,
no.
Like you could talk about it in reference to like your future husband, but like not actually like talking about boys.
Even that wasn't like fun and light and giddy. It was like serious.
It was serious.
It was like, my future husband will be a righteous priest and older. Like,
right.
What? You're 12.
Yeah, you're 12.
Calm down.
But I was such a boy crazy kid. It was just refreshing for me to see this girl who's going through like the totally normal, natural time of being boy crazy. And her mom's just like, ha ha, you're funny.
You know? That was real sweet.
It was sweet.
Let's talk about the Utah accents in the Rose household because they are powerful.
Uh-huh.
I noted when Whitney's husband, Justin, says, I don't know how I feel about this.
Oof.
Phil.
Ooh.
F-I-L-L. P-H-I-L. I don't know how I feel about this.
It's just like the laziest accent you've ever heard.
It is peak Utah accent. That Ooh. Is it. And then later they go down to their speakeasy in their basement. And Whitney says, like, the fact that we have a bar in our home, it's such a big deal.
It's such a big deal.
D-I-L-L. Dill.
It's such a funny accent, like like that lazy ill sound, and then like mountain, you know, we're going to the yep. mountain. One thing I noted from that scene when they go into the speakeasy, the pocket door, the like hidden pocket door, I was like, Utah women love a pocket door. I bet yes. there's pocket doors in all these houses.
Anything, any sliding entryway. Oh yeah. Okay, so we're at Whitney's house. They're in their little speakeasy, and she tells Heather, I've decided to resign from the church, mm-hmm. like officially. And she frames it as like, I've been doing all this kind of healing work, cut to her with an energy healer. So interesting. Yes. And she's like, yeah, I've been doing all this healing work. I have this childhood trauma. It's rooted in the church. So I'm going to like officially remove my name from the records of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And Heather's like skeptical
yeah.
and anxious.
Yes.
And I want to talk about this interaction because I think it is fascinating.
For sure. I'm not surprised by Heather's reaction, but I'm disappointed because Whitney obviously is turning to the friend who she thinks she can like rely on most of this information to be mm-hmm. like, I understand, I'm kind of going through the same thing. But instead Heather's like what are you really going to get out of this, you mm-hmm. know?
Like, how will your day-to-day life be any different?
Right.
And Whitney's like, it won't, but I'm talking about like deep internal trauma, and like this is almost a symbolic act, though there are like material consequences, right? But yeah, I'm with you. Like, I understood Heather's reaction because of what we know about Heather.
Yeah.
And also, to be totally honest, because of my own like anxieties about removing my name from the records of the church.
Right.
The number one anxiety is your family will find out.
Yes.
And that's basically what Heather says. She's like, even though my dad is dead and my mom isn't speaking to me, which, whoa, Heather's mom is not speaking yeah. to her.
Bombshell.
She's like, even with all that, I still want to be a good daughter. And she describes like removing her name from the records of the church as plunging a knife in the back of her family.
Yeah, Ooh. Sure.
Like the ultimate betrayal.
Yeah. And I don't know if we've addressed this on the podcast before, but neither of us have removed our records pretty much for the exact same reason. I mean, for that reason, and also because it's like it takes some steps.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just like an email. You have to like actually take some steps.
Right. Yeah. It feels like giving the church too much power in some ways. Though I know lots of people who feel differently, and I really respect people who choose to take that step. Like, I think that is great totally. If that's where you're at, like on your journey. But I did relate to Heather's anxiety about what's her family going to think. They're going to feel so betrayed.
Mm-hmm.
I've already put them through, you know, me leaving very publicly. This just feels like a lot. And mm-hmm. she also still clearly has some like sort of theological anxiety. She's like, you're choosing outer darkness. You're choosing.
Yeah.
I think on some level she still kind of believes. And I, again, sort of relate to that. In the back of your head, you're like, if there's any chance any of this is even really true, I am really fucking myself eternally.
Yeah, you're fucked. Yeah. I know. I was kind of taken aback. I mean, not that we haven't seen this in past seasons, but when she said that thing to Whitney about you're choosing outer darkness, I was like, wow, like proving again, like, Heather is such a Mormon.
Yeah, you know, such a Mormon.
They found a Mormon for this show.
They really did.
And good on them, because she's great. I love her. But yeah, she's like truly speaking to like the plight of many ex-Mormons there.
Yes, it's really true.
She's speaking the language.
She even talks about removing your name as excommunication, which it's not. It's not the same thing.
Yeah.
But she talks about it in that way where it's like she thinks of it as a really negative kind of dark thing, in the way that excommunication is very negative. Like, you're being rejected by the church, or you are rejecting the church and your family, essentially.
Yeah. It's intense stuff.
I will say, too, like, I don't know what the process is if you want to officially resign from other religions. Like, if you were born into a Catholic family and baptized and your name exists within Catholic records, I don't really know what that looks like. But in Mormonism, it is a little ridiculous historically to remove your name. So it used to be that you would like go to your bishop and tell him, remove me from the records. And then you're kind of counting on the bishop to actually do something about that. And I can't tell you how many people I ran into as a missionary who were like, their names were on word records. And they were like, leave me the fuck alone. I've told you 100 times. I don't want anything to do with the church. I want out. Take my name off. But the bishops, I mean, I sat in word councils where bishops were like, we're not doing that.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And you always could appeal directly to, like, send a letter, you know, sidestep your bishop and go higher. Right. But you were always just kind of at the mercy of the church. Like, are they actually going to do this?
Yeah.
Maybe, maybe not.
I mean, why would they?
So quitmormon.com is like a relatively recent development where this man, he's a lawyer, he set up this website where folks can request a resignation letter be sent on their behalf. And it's done in this kind of systematic way. And the church responds because there's like a system for it, right? And I read an article in the Salt Lake Tribune from 2019. And at that point in 2019, quitmormon.com had submitted 40,000 resignations.
That's crazy.
And I'm sure that those numbers have continued to be staggering.
Yeah.
And they told him that in 2019 that he needed to start sending notarized letters because people were submitting resignations on behalf of like Thomas S. Monson, who was the prophet at the time,
which is hilarious.
Which is hilarious. Yeah. Like, objectively a hilarious, that's really gag.
Funny. Yeah.
But it did give the church a reason to be like, oh, no, 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 we need to create another roadblock. So now you are submitting notarized letters to the church to resign.
Mm-hmm. And just cross your fingers that it takes.
Yes.
Because it might not.
I asked a good friend of mine if I could share this because she just recently resigned. She said that the sort of last straw was the AP article about abuse in the church, and what a very reasonable last straw to have. She was just like, enough, cannot be affiliated with this in any way. And so she went to a notary, sent in her letter, signed it, and the church wrote her back saying, like, we've received your letter and accepted your resignation, and if you ever want to be a member of the church again, like, your local bishop can help you be rebaptized, which blah. But the kicker was, so she's married, but she never changed her name, legally or in the records of the church.
Mm-hmm.
But the church knows she got married and they know her husband's last name.
Mm-hmm.
Her husband, who is not a Mormon and never has been and never will be. And so in her notarized letter, and you know, they care so much about identity that they're asking you to get things notarized. She used her legal name, which is the name she has used her entire life. But in their responses, they used her husband's last name multiple times.
Man.
And she sent me a screenshot of it. And I was like, I was irate. I was seeing red. I was like, fuck you. Who do these people think they are to tell you what your name should be?
Yeah. If that isn't the most Mormon thing.
One last dig, man.
Yeah. Just
turn
you
on your way out.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Anyway, in summary, I love that Whitney Rose is now like a spokesperson for quitmormon.com.
I think that's love beautiful. That she name dropped the website and went over all that, because people will probably follow in her footsteps after seeing that episode. Like maybe people who just haven't been members for a long time who are like, I want to get out, you know, officially.
Yeah. I think that's awesome. Again, on Watch What Happens Live after the episode, Whitney was on, and Andy Cohen asked her, like, so is it official? Like, did it take, you know, are you no longer a member? And she was like, yep, it worked. My resignation was accepted. This was my third time trying.
That's crazy.
Yep.
Yeah. So proof, sometimes it doesn't take on the first try.
Yep.
Yeah, that's really frustrating.
Anyway, love those Mormons. Love how Real Housewives of Salt Lake is like willing to go there into the Mormon content.
I know. They're talking about some real Mormon stuff. I'm pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Though I do still want my like true blue small town rich Mormon family version, the TLC version. That's what I called it.
Yes. Yeah. I would like a character who is Heather Gay like 10 years ago.
Yes.
In deep. I want to watch that show too.
Yeah.
The remainder of the episode really centers around Coach Shaw's 51st birthday at this real bougie house up in the foothills. And, you know, it is what it is. Some drama plays out. But the thing that stuck out to me was the shots where the people are walking into the party and it's nighttime. You just see the, like the valley lights below. Yeah. And I was like, this is what makes Salt Lake a magical place.
This is it.
Like, this is the there place. Are problems to be sure.
Yeah.
But there's something really like beautiful and majestic and magnificent about Salt Lake.
It's a beautiful spot. Yeah. If I was a super rich person, I don't know. No reason not to live up there.
Yeah. What else is there to say about this party? I mean, we already talked about how Lisa and Seth have a very awkward interaction.
We briefly mentioned it. I did love that interaction. Like, I love how Seth, I feel like often like a husband in that scenario might be like, oh, it's going to be okay. You know, like whatever. Like be like, this isn't really my fight, even though she said stuff about him just being like, whatever, but he's straight up like, I don't know. You said some pretty crazy stuff,
you know,
and she's like doubling down and coming up with excuses. And he's like, you know, I appreciated that.
And how she's like, I don't expect you to forgive me or whatever. And he's like, yep. There was one moment in particular where she said something like, I've never said anything bad about Meredith.
Yeah, and he's like,
and he was literally like, you got to be kidding me. Like his face was like, please.
Yeah. Loved it.
I'm not going to stand for this.
It was so awkward. My face is getting red. That like never happens.
Oh my gosh, are you just so heated about Lisa?
I'm a little bit heated.
It's your mocktail kicking in.
I know. Oh, one observation I made about the party too, in this random house, from this random character who seems like she might become actually a character this season.
Yeah, Angie. I think she's a new housewife.
Okay. There were hanging lights that looked like fly tape.
Oh,
it looked
no.
like she had fly tape everywhere and I couldn't stop seeing it.
I can't not think about fly tape when I think about a house in Utah just because of our like grandparents and
fly tape everywhere.
So of course your brain goes straight to fly tape.
Yeah. Utah fly tape. Yep.
One other thought I had from the party was Heather like sees this really tall man and is like, ooh, who's that? And it turns out he's like a former Celtic. And I just hope she's getting some action. I hope she hooked up with that basketball player. I just am Team Heather and I want her to be blissfully happy.
I want her to have everything. I want her to come out on top.
Yes, absolutely.
Please bless Heather. Heather
Please bless Heather Gay. So all in all, great episode. Lots to come this season. I mean, I feel like the big storyline of Real Housewives of Salt Lake City is Jen Shaw's like upcoming guilty plea. And, you know, that's its own side story that honestly is not my favorite part of the show.
No.
I just kind of endure all of that. But I will say on Watch What Happens Live, Andy asked Lisa and Whitney, he was like, have you spoken to Jen since she pled guilty? And they're like, nope.
Whoa. Okay.
So that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. We're in it for the Mormon content.
Yeah.
The end of the day. Let's talk that's more about Outer Darkness. That's the most
interesting part of the show for sure. Yeah. Take me to Outer Darkness. Let's see what's up. On that note, thanks for joining us for this wonderful Real Housewives recap. Let us know if you want more.
Yeah, we can do these.
Send us DMs, send us emails. We love to get them. We're at pleasebless@gmail.com. Follow us everywhere at pleasebless pod, TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube.
Subscribe on YouTube. Watch our videos.
Rate and review.
Rate and review, please. If you're having a good day.
If you're feeling cheerful.
Yeah. If you're liking what we're doing.
And yeah, please bless these Real Housewives, some of them more than others.
Yeah.
And please bless this podcast.
Amen.